Okay, good morning. I'm David Padgett, and I'm the, I guess I'll introduce myself. David A. Padgett is an associate professor of geography and director of the Geographic Information Sciences Laboratory at Tennessee State University in Nashville, Tennessee. I have developed a geography environmental justice curriculum with a strong emphasis upon service learning. I've led GIS workshops for health professionals at Meharry Medical College and Charles Drew University of Science and Medicine in Los Angeles. Good morning. Today's presentation is entitled An Evaluation of the Effectiveness of GIS Training Workshops for Public Health Professionals and Community Partners. I've been a GIS user for 30 years, and so it's almost like rolling out of bed in the morning for me to use GIS. But most of you all know the learning curve for GIS is extremely steep. Some people get it, some people just never get it. And so we know that, well, just in my experience, being a 30 years in the industry, the public health arena, welcome. You've been around for like 10 years. I remember when I would talk to people in the medical or health field about GIS, and they look at me like, you know, like I was speaking in some language that they didn't speak. But now, healthography is the theme of this conference. And what's the catchphrase? Your zip code is more important than your genetic code. So I'm not a health professional at all, but I work for a lot of health organizations training people in GIS. I have no disclosures to make relevant to this presentation. So, Meharry Medical College was part of a consortium of universities, including East Tennessee State University, University of Memphis, and University of Tennessee at Knoxville. As part of the long-distance internet facilitated educational program for applied technology in health. And so the otherwise known as LifePath, the main objective of this program or grant is to train health professionals in any number of technologies and areas of expertise. The partner that I worked for was Meharry Medical College. I worked as a GIS consultant for Meharry. Meharry, some of you may know, is one of the four historically black medical college universities. Half of all black doctors and dentists graduated from Meharry Medical College. So it's quite a prestigious institution in the African American community. And the overwhelming majority of the health professionals that graduate from Meharry go on to work in underserved communities. And so our primary objective was to provide geographic information systems training for health professionals at Meharry and nonprofits in the area who are most likely to work in underserved communities and on issues such as racial health disparities. So one of the things that I wanted when I designed the workshops was I wanted people to have hands-on experience. So luckily, Harry has a very nice lab. They did not have GIS there. That was challenge number one, was to install ArcGIS onto the lab there. And if any of you all have had any experience installing ARC, it's not easy sometimes. It's the heaviest program that runs on the Microsoft platform. And so if you don't have some juice in your equipment, it's going to crash you out. That's what I tell my students all the time. They come in with these little laptops their parents bought. I'm like, hey, you know, you might want to read the specs before you load it up and slow everything down. Also, I train the participants, and there they are, that's me, on how to use GPS. A lot of health data don't have street addresses. For example, a few years ago in Nashville, we were very concerned about West Nile virus. You're not going to find mosquito habitat at 123 Sesame Street or 2000 Broadway. It's going to be out in the wetlands somewhere. And so some of the health professionals that attend the workshop were working for Metro Health Department on the West Nile virus. They were trying to figure out how do we pinpoint the location of where we find these larvae. Had to use GPS. Also, there's a lot of geospatial health, demographic, and socioeconomic data resources out there, including the census. I've been using census data for a long time. I remember using paper, being in the library, and now we had this thing called the American Community Survey, and American Fact Finder, that at first was very user-friendly, and now it's just a monster. It's just a cyclops. But so I had to help them work through that to get demographic data. Now, we had participants from a lot of backgrounds. Again, another thing about training GIS is you have people who are literally computer illiterate to people who knew all about spatial analysis. That's the range of backgrounds that we had in the class. But the objective was that these people who would leave our workshop would continue on. You know, a lot of people take, I'm not going to ask for hands, but I've done this for 30 years. There's so many people that, yeah, I took the GIS training course in January and decided to start working on my project in March, and it's not like riding a bicycle, as most of you know. I went 18 years without riding a bike, but when I got on it, no problem. GIS, I'll go 2 weeks and we'll forget some commands. So we're hoping that they will perhaps go back and institutionalize GIS at their organization, wherever they happen to be from. Hopefully they'll be able to effectively apply GIS software in health-based research. And most importantly, as I tell everybody that I train, it's not really about the technology. It's really about being able to think spatially. And it's so hard to get people to understand that. If you don't know how to think spatially, then it's going to be very difficult for you to take any data and transform it into map format effectively. And so when I teach GIS at Tennessee State University, my students don't see a computer until 8 weeks into the class. And we talk about projections and datums and all those things, and even different types of census geography. Very few people know what the difference is between a block, group, census block, and what that means. So we have very basic principles of cartography, which is very different now. When I took cartography, it was pen and ink, bent over a light table for hours and hours. And so back then, cartographers had skill, you had talent, you had to have talent to make a map. But the good news now is anybody can make a map with all these new products. The bad news is anybody can make a map. And so I've seen some things out there that are bad. And so even colors, you know, you have to be careful about your color ramps and things like that. So also we hope that the participants would continue to train in GIS, have skill set, and really have some knowledge of some of the health-based data sets that are out there maintained by government, NGOs, and others. So this project is in progress still. We're evaluating whether or not we were effective. Did we effectively train these folks? Did we achieve what we wanted to achieve? And so these workshops went on for 3 years, from 2011 to 2013. You know, I designed and led all of them. There were 9 of them. We had about 100 people attend total. Some of the classes had 12 people. Some of the classes had less. Some of the classes had more. And again, we had people from all backgrounds, government, academia. A lot of nursing students showed up. I didn't expect that. I didn't know nurses did GIS, but I guess apparently they do. I mean, not just nurses, directors of nursing programs. The director of TSU's nursing program, the director of Belmont University, Vanderbilt University's nursing program director took the classes. Again, most were geospatial technology novices. Most came in at the very basic beginning level. 35% had some previous experience, but most of them were first timers. And so that can be a challenge. The question is, were they, I don't want to say indoctrinated or convinced to continue, but that was the goal. Just a little background. This is we were very fortunate to have Dr. Tony Ayana, who actually did a preliminary analysis of some of our workshops. There was a series of workshops that I did in March of 2012 entitled GIS and Epidemiology, GIS and Health Data Visualization, and GIS and Health Disparities Research. So you see there the breakdown of the attendees, predominantly female, 43% African American, white. So we had a pretty good balance of people, all ages, everywhere from 18-year-olds who were still in high school to people who probably would not want to tell us their age, but you know, there is an alternative to getting older. So we would rather be older than the alternative. So we had a good group of students. So we wanted to hit the population that reflected our community. And that approximately, you know, somewhat overrepresented in African Americans, but we were, of course, at Meharry, and didn't have the gender balance, but that probably reflects the fact that we were dealing with academic institutions primarily in health. The attendees were evaluated through a pre-workshop test, and then, of course, there was a post-workshop test, which were the same questions, and so the question was, did they learn anything? So some of the questions that we asked were to define GIS, describe GPS, define latitude and longitude, and describe what an attribute table is, very important. Because as I explained to most people who take my workshops, you're not really looking at a map, you're looking at data. And so the attribute table is actually the guts of GIS. And if you're, what is it, garbage in, garbage out? If your attribute table is garbage, everything on that map is most likely garbage. Or you can use the attribute table to manipulate data. And so that's what I do with my students all the time. Like, I can show you a map that I can make it appear as if your community is the worst community in the world in terms of every health problem if I use the symbology correctly. Or I can take that same data set and make it look like your community is doing just fine. And the media, print media, and also online media are really good at doing that, you know, just making a map. I showed some students some maps of Ferguson, Missouri, that were done by media that will show you so many different pictures of what's going on there. But it's the same data, exact same data, but depending upon whether you want it, how you show it. So that's very important to understand what that is. Remote sensing, we use a lot of remote sensing, and of course, defined cartography. So for the most part, the exit exam results were pretty good. I don't know, I guess I need to do it. You probably should have done a better job. We didn't do a whole lot of remote sensing, but probably have to work on that. So I'd like to thank Dr. Ayana for analyzing that analysis for us. So just anecdotally, looking at the outcomes of the preliminary outcomes of the workshops, we had two of the participants who actually, I know, went on to use the technology at their work sites. One of them, who came in as a novice, used the technology to successfully write a $500,000 Promise Community Grant, which, as you know, the Promise Community Grant is chock full of census data in order to make that application, and she actually got the grant. Some of our attendees came to do one thing. I have this data set of XYZ, my boss just wants me to map this, and that's it. So even though our funders, HRSA, wanted to have much longer lasting, wanted the lessons to stick and have these people go back to their organizations and hire a GIS manager, some of them just came in and said, look, Doc, I just need to map this, and that's it. And so we discussed whether that was a successful outcome, but I said, if that's what people wanted when they came to the workshop, and they made the map. That was great. As a matter of fact, after the third year, so many people would come to me after the workshop and say, yeah, Doc, this was great, wonderful, but I really just need to map this, but I didn't bring the data, or it's too big, or I just have it all on paper, and I don't even know how to get it into a spreadsheet. And so I created a workshop called the BYOD, which with GIS sometimes turns into BYOB afterwards, depending on what you're doing. But bring your own data. That was really a good workshop. So people brought all kinds of stuff. People had stuff on paper. People had just a bunch of zip codes. People who had data didn't know what the zip code areas were. People didn't know that you had to have the data in zip codes. People didn't know that you could get a shape file of zip codes. So it was, and the way it was designed was so that everybody got to see everybody else's project, so that it was a holistic experience for everybody. And at the end of that workshop, it was almost like a mass unit. You know, it had some people who had really difficult issues, started those first, some people had easy stuff. And so by the end of that 2 days, everybody had what they wanted to get out of that and left happy. So. So the next part of the, I have my colleague here, Mrs. Lutheria Peters, who came on board to, we're looking now that these workshops have been over for a year, at whether or not our participants on the long term have continued to use the technology.
So thanks, Dr. Padgett, for inviting me onto your project. I really appreciate it. I work for the Association of American Medical Colleges, and we met at the ESRI conference when I was actually presenting on the diffusion of innovation of GIS technology within a nonprofit. And so there was a lot of synergy between the work that Dr. Padgett was doing and what I was trying to articulate in terms of what is it like for a user of GIS to try and have other colleagues at their organization not use an inferior technology, but really try and learn a GIS and actually apply it in their work. So in thinking about Dr. Padgett's project, what I'm thinking of doing is really trying to engage both his intermediate outcomes and also the immediate outcomes and try to translate that into a long-term and impact evaluation. So for Dr. Padgett, you know, among his objectives was really to see continued use of the GIS technology, whether or not participants have institutionalized it within their organization or within whatever projects they're working on. And really, are they continuing, as you know, as he's already explained, there's a high learning curve. So in terms of maintaining your skill set, are you going ahead and continuing your training? So I'll be using both an individual level and an organizational level theoretical framework. The first that we typically use, part of my job at the AAMC, is to assess people's learning and skill development in faculty development work. And what the scale that we use is called self-efficacy. And the benefits of this particular scale is that it helps us understand, to the extent that the intervention that we're providing them, is their confidence increasing? And it's really helping us understand, to the extent that they're mastering the domains, that they're able to apply new ideas and experiment with them. And also, you know, we're hoping that, as in Dr. Padgett's program, that their performance with this technology is going to change. And of course, there's persistence and beyond the current levels that they started in. At the institutional level, I'm bringing in the theoretical framework adopted from Rogers' 1995 work by Chan and Williamson, where they're actually looking at different ways that GIS can be diffused within an organization, and there's some five steps. It's much more complicated than this, but you know, here are some ways that we can begin to figure out how is this training being institutionalized for the participants. So it includes, to the extent to which they're able to put GIS as an agenda for their organization, whether or not they're able to match some kind of problem with GIS and whether or not they're actually being able to restructure operations within their organization. And then they're really advancing on to clarifying and basically making GIS more discrete part of the work operations. And then, of course, like within our organization, what happened is that we actually hired a geographer, and now he's doing a lot of the GIS work for chiefs, for directors, etc. So that's an example of actually having GIS routinized. Thank you.